What's good, New Numa family? Do you subscribe to or believe in what we discuss on New Numa Godcast? If you do, while I got your attention, hit that subscribe button. It'll mean a lot to us. Peace.
Hello, everyone. My name is Georgian Banoff, and I'm the founder of Global Celebration. And I want to invite you to jump on New Numa Godcast. It's a powerful podcast with Norman Brown. You will love it. Norman is a great host, and I appreciate Norman. Appreciate you, what you're doing. Love you, man.
Yo, welcome to the show, Stephen.
Yo, what's good, Norm? Good to be here.
Yeah, man. I'm glad that I was able to, first of all, find you. It's kind of interesting because recently I've kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like the Lord has been just reminding me of people that are OGs in the Christian hip-hop game, and he had me to start reaching out to some of them, and one of them was you, of course, and I felt like, you know, it's like, one of the things that I would say before we even get into this, man, that I just want to make it very known to people that are in my audience. You know, one of the things that I'm very bothered by with the OGs in Christian hip hop is that a lot of times they're not getting the type of shine that they should be getting. They're not getting the type of recognition or even the respect that they deserve, because they were the ones that actually made it possible for this new generation to do what they do. And it's like, I look at things like, I see these young guys, they'll have their Spotify numbers up and it'll be like a million streams or something like that or whatever. And when I think about people like yourself, you started when there wasn't no such thing as Spotify. There wasn't an iTunes. There wasn't, this heavy thing with the internet where everything goes to the internet. People are buying from the internet. You know, you go to YouTube and watch videos and everybody, you know, they talking about making their videos go viral and all that kind of stuff. So people like you, you know, I'm just throwing out a number. This is not a reflection of yours. I'm just going to make up something. But a person like you might have, for instance, 10,000 followers, right? But then somebody else that just came out 2 years ago have a million. And you're like, what in the world is going on with these people with a million followers that haven't even been around that long? And sometimes when I see that, it bothers me. And I'm sure whether, you know, some people admit it or not, even the OGs are bothered by that sometimes, because they're thinking, wow, man, we put all this sweat, blood and tears into this, and yet we don't even see the type of seeming, I'm going to call it the turnaround or the ROI, return on investment or whatever, that these younger guys are seeing. And so before we get into the interview, man, I just want to get you to just kind of introduce yourself to the audience and let them know who they're about to hear.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks for sharing that about Christian hip hop too, Norm. So we got, my name is Believin' Stephen, also known as Stephen Brindle. I live in Philadelphia. I've been in Philly for close to 15 years now, born and raised in Pittsburgh, and I'm a strength and conditioning coach at the University of Pennsylvania. I've also spent some time with the Philadelphia Eagles, the University of Pittsburgh, and Temple University as a strength and conditioning coach as far as my career is concerned. And I've been putting out Christian hip hop since 2004 now. So we're talking 17 years. And I attend Risen Christ Fellowship in Philly, where Brian Davis and Ant Coughlin, as well as Valter, are the pastors. And formerly Shylin was one of the pastors.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know Shylin was up there. I mean, I knew he was from Philly, but I mean, I didn't know. That's interesting that he was at the church. So so I was just out of curiosity, because I didn't hear you mention it, I was on your Instagram and I was looking through, you know, photos and stuff, and I saw a photo of you and two young men, and you was like, "These are my little guys." Are those your sons that you were in the picture with, or just like
Those are my nephews. I have a lot of nieces and nephews. Lord willing, I'll have children one day, but I don't right now. And yeah, those are my guys, my nephews. I think it was probably Asaph and Justice.
Okay. Are those sons of Timothy or another one of your brothers?
Correct. Those are Timothy's, yep.
Okay, all right, cool. Yeah, man, you know, one of the things that I kind of remember about the early on days when I found out about you, that it was almost like people would say the names Timothy, Brendo, and Stephen, Believing Stephen, almost in the same breath because they knew you were brothers. And so that was one of the things that caused both of you to stand out in my mind, because I was like, oh, yo, this is two brothers in Christian hip-hop together. That's what's up. You know, maybe y'all didn't do it together per se, but, you know, you were in the Christian hip-hop scene, and you both were, you know, pretty well-known. And anyway, I just want to know, man, because obviously, you know, you grew up in Philly. And what part of Philly, by the way?
Well, just a quick correction there. I grew up in Pennsylvania, but Pittsburgh.
So Pittsburgh
is about 5 hours from Philly. Pittsburgh is on the west part of Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia is on the eastern part of the state. So I grew up in Pittsburgh and actually went to Taylor Alderdice High School, the same high school as Mac Miller and Wiz Khalifa. They weren't there at the time that I was there. I have some friends who are, you know, friends with them. But, yeah, so the east side of Pittsburgh is where I grew up, near the University of Pittsburgh. And then I live in West Philly now, and I've lived in West Philly for about, I guess, what now, like 13, 14 years.
Okay. All right. So my fault, got that information mixed up. So in Pittsburgh, I know from when I was growing up, one of my favorite shows back then was Hill Street Blues, man. Did you live anywhere near there?
I used to watch that, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, man, that's one of my favorite shows from when I was a kid. It was like I don't know. It was just like, I guess because I was into the cops and stuff, and that was like, you know, one of those shows that was really good back then. So, and as far as growing up in Pittsburgh, man, like, did you grow up? I know you have obviously one brother at least. How many siblings do you have?
I have three brothers. Two of them are professing believers. The oldest is not, who lives in New York. Most listeners who are familiar with Christian hip hop will know about Timothy, my older brother. He lives in Philly, and then I have a younger brother, Patrick. He is a believer, and he lives in Alabama now.
Okay. Cool, man. So growing up, How like far apart are you all in the age range?
Yeah, my oldest brother, he's 4 years older than I am. Timothy is 3 years older than I am, and the youngest is 4 years younger than I am. So the oldest, I want to say he's what, 41 now. Timothy's 40. I'm 37 now, and the youngest is 33.
Okay, cool. So when you were growing up, I'm sure that there was a lot of sibling rivalry going on, or was there?
Oh, yeah. There was sibling rivalry. There was a lot of fights and a lot of great times playing sports, but a lot of fights if your team lost in baseball or basketball, or you lost in Madden or whatever. There was a lot of fights for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I could imagine, especially on Madden. Yeah, I used to be into Madden myself, man. I remember Madden 92, 93 when I was using Thurman Thomas. Yo, I was using Thurman Thomas back. Yeah, yeah. I was like on the Buffalo Bills back then because Thurman Thomas was like one of the biggest stars in that show, on that game or whatever. And so, yeah, that was one of my favorite years on Madden, by the way. But, so as far as when you were growing up in Pittsburgh, man, like, were you in a Christian family home or not?
Yeah, I can break that down real quick. I don't know if you ever had the controller thrown at you in Madden, though. That hurts kind of. But anyways, lose the game and, you know, just throw the whole controller at you. But growing up in Pittsburgh, I can get into a little bit of that story now. So my parents met at a church in the South Hills of Pittsburgh, got married, were attending that church, and then they divorced when I was just about 5 years old. And so from there, the church actually ended up later on being kind of exposed as cult-like. And so my dad, he continued to be faithful to that church, and my mom was no longer feeling it for, you know, good reasons. They got divorced, and so my mom is the one who had custody, and because of some of the church hurt, I think she allowed the way that she raised us to be a little bit more lenient as far as what we consumed media-wise, meaning music and movies and things like that, where my dad remained more strict and teaching us Bible stories, having Bible time with us when he saw us. My mom had custody, but, you know, Tuesdays, sometimes Thursdays and weekends, we would spend often with my dad, and like every other weekend. So I would say I was raised in a home that was split, but raised knowing Christian principles and biblical principles, but I don't believe I was saved back then. But I say that with a disclaimer. I do think for most of the people that I know, most of the people that I know, even if they were wilding out and doing some crazy stuff in their teenage years or young adult years, most of the people that I know that are saved now, when they tell their testimony, there's some type of root of some type of seed that was planted of Christian faith early on, whether it's their grandma used to take them to church, their dad used to take them to church, they had discussions with their friends early on, and then later on down the path, it's like, oh, snap, God snatches them up and completely transforms their heart. And I think my story is somewhat similar to that, in that I was exposed to Christian principles, biblical principles, Bible stories. But Norm, I don't think when I was a youngster like 9, 10, 11, I don't think I understood the severity of my sin, because I was just talking to someone about this, you know, over the weekend, and that's when you're around that age, like, you haven't done a lot of the taboos that society will say are taboos or that you even know are super taboos. Like, you might have gotten in a fight with your brother. You might have taken a cookie out of the cookie jar when you weren't supposed to. You might have had a bad attitude towards your mom, but you haven't maybe gotten in a fight at school. You haven't sold no drugs. You haven't been drunk out your mind. You haven't been just being promiscuous with women. You maybe haven't been cussing a lot. You know, there's sin is sin, but I do think at that younger age, for me, I didn't understand the concept of the severity of sinning against a holy God. And so I would say, like, yeah, I believe in God. I believe I need Jesus. But I didn't have a true faith, because once I got to high school, it was straight wilding out. Like, I gave in to the peer pressure and started drinking heavily, started vandalizing property with my friends when we would get drunk, started smoking trees, started being promiscuous with women. And I remember, man, and if it's cool, I can get into, like, just my testimony.
Of course.
Kind of transfer into that. So basically, when I was a senior in high school, I was playing sports. I was on the basketball team. So I got good grades. So, like, Monday through Friday, I was going to practice, going to my games. I was studying or doing my homework. But the weekends was straight wild now. And I remember I got into a fight with the dude who I was living with, because at the time my mom had moved to Virginia. I stayed in Pittsburgh to finish my senior year. I got in a fight with my roommate at a different party, and it was like I was drunk, he was drunk. And then I remember another time, like, I got so twisted that I woke up, like, in the wrong room. And I was like, yo, this is just wild. I was like, yo, this is not how God wants me to live. Like, I don't like who I'm becoming, right? And then I will admit that my brother, and this was 2001, he had a drastic transformation, kind of like a Saul of Tarsus transformation, getting knocked off his horse. Because even in, like, my mom's eyes or my dad's eyes or those around us, like, I wild out on the weekends or whatnot, but my brother, he was doing battle rap, cussing in his rhymes. He was on all types of drugs, selling drugs, and kind of seen as, oh, he's really out there in the world, where I was what I call a nominal Christian. Meaning I would say, yeah, I'm a Christian. You know, I pray at night sometimes. Every once in a while I read our daily bread. I wasn't digesting the word. I wasn't in constant fellowship with dope believers. I wasn't reading books of things of God. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't practicing my faith. I was a nominal Christian. But seeing that drastic transformation, what happened was I also saw how he went from being conniving and not trustworthy to being, like, a faithful brother. And he would encourage me, like, yo, you should really get in reading the Bible. And so before, I don't know if you're – a lot of people aren't familiar with this, but I knew of – I had a Bible that was called the PIX Bible. I think it was P-I-X. And it was basically a Bible that had, think of comic book. So, like, think of the story of Samson, and you got, like, pictures of Samson, and then there's, like, little bubbles saying what he said. So that's how I would, quote-unquote, read the Bible or learn the stories. But I actually started reading the actual scriptures, and I read the entire Bible in a little over a year, my freshman year of college. And what's crazy, Norm, is my freshman year, I was at the University of Delaware. And like you said, you know, OGs and Christian hip hop. Back then, I had a computer in my room. I didn't have a cell phone. I had a landline, not even cordless. And I used to have to use, like, a phone card in order to make calls, right? So we're really, really, I wasn't, like, videotaping nothing or, like, taking pictures. I didn't have a phone. Back then. And the dude who lived next to me, he would bump old Christian hip hop. He would bump LA Symphony. He would bump Mars Ill. He would bump Cross Movement and groups like that. Fourth Avenue Jones, stuff like that. And I was like, man, you know, looking back, I'm like, is this a coincidence? Like, I don't think so. It was all part of God's sovereign plan. But anyways, for me, the transformation really occurred through reading the word, understanding it's by grace through faith that we're saved. It's not by works. Because before that, I thought if I was a good person, I would be saved. If I read my Our Daily Bread, I was saved. You know, I've heard of the sinner's prayer before, but I didn't really understand the concept of sin, and that my sin was why Jesus had to die on the cross. and that because I sinned, I had offended God, and I was at war with God, in opposition to God, an enemy of God, if I didn't repent. And so for me, the change was more gradual, because I can remember, Norm, I used to read the Bible because I knew I was supposed to, and then I would go wild out and get drunk and do whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it was a gradual sanctification process that the Lord used. And then I got exposed to good fellowship. And that really helped me, because my sophomore year of college at the University of Delaware, I got involved with a Bible study group called the Warriors for Christ. And my brother started rapping for the Lord in Philly. And so I'm only at Delaware 50, 45 minutes with no traffic, maybe an hour with traffic from Philly. So I would go to Philly all the time for different shows. And you mentioned some cats earlier, like Jay Silas, like he was up there rapping The Truth, Cross Movement, Jafia Life, Redeemed Thought, Everyday Process. So I was in the mix with these cats on a frequent basis. And that became, that was huge. Christian hip hop was huge for me in my transformation process, because it was like, okay, I can have my life can be changed, but I also can have a social circle. I also cannot think like, okay, I'm going to be a Christian, I'm going to be corny like Ned Flanders. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can actually be Christian and be cool. You know what I mean? Still dress the way I dress. Like back then, you know, it was baggies. It was baggy and, you know, long tees and fitteds. I could still I could still dress that way. I could still be, you know, a hip-hop head. And, okay, well, now I'm just a hip-hop head for the Lord instead of a hip-hop head, you know, for the world. So that's basically how I came to faith. In a nutshell, I would say I think being in a home, even though it was split and it was broken, it was helpful to have a Christian principle. Shout out to my dad for really pushing that on us and for praying for me and my brothers. And then it was really reading the Word. And all of that was God and His sovereignty working to transform my heart. I can't take any of the credit. All glory goes to Him. So thanks for listening on that that answer through growing up in Pittsburgh and then my testimony.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That's a lot of good stuff, man, that happened to you early on. I was interviewing Han Solo. I'm pretty sure you probably heard of Han Solo before.
I know him too. Yep.
Yeah, and he was telling me about how early on in his transformation that he was able to be mentored or discipled by Deuce and Brady. So he was talking about that, and I was just like, wow, that's kind of interesting how a dude like him comes into the kingdom of God, and then God sends those kind of people to help to, you know, disciple him and stuff. So yeah, that was pretty cool, man, that you had that experience. So based on what you're telling me now, it sounds like you had a good relationship with your mother and your father. Is that true?
Yes, it's true. My dad moved away to Hawaii when I was 10, okay? So he got remarried. His wife used to live in Hawaii. And the church that I said was, you know, revealed to be cult-like, they persuaded him to move out to Hawaii, even though he had four sons in Pittsburgh. And so sometimes I tell people that, and they're like, yo, your dad lives in Hawaii? That is so dope, man. And I'm like, nah, bro, that crushed me. That was super difficult as a 10-year-old kid to have your father move across the world and not have him there. For me, it was a huge loss. It led to a lot of depression and my late middle school, high school years, to the point, and this will get into a little bit of, you know, music and ministry stuff. That led to a lot of suffering in my life that was very painful. They say that around the years of 10 to about 14, 15, those are the most transformative years and influential years for a father to be in his son's life. I did not have that, and I love my dad. We still talk every week now. I've forgiven him for that decision, but it was very difficult, and that led to me going through some of the depression that I went through. That led me to have a certain mission in doing music. So when I first started doing music for the Lord, this was around 2004, I was going to a lot of shows in Philly, like I mentioned before, and people, and I used to write rhymes a lot, and I would freestyle even back in high school with some of my friends who weren't believers. We would freestyle, be drunk at parties freestyling. And people were like, yo, when are you going to start, like, rapping like your brother? And I have to give a shout-out to the Apologists from Christ-Centric. We recently did a project together, which we could get into later. But I told him I rapped, and, like, I would be on the low. Like, and I think everyone who raps goes through this process. Like, you don't just become nice at rapping day one. At first, you might be a little bit shy and timid, and then you eventually share it with a couple people, and they're like, yeah, that's pretty dope. And then it gives you confidence. You share it with more people. And then it's like, okay, maybe there's a gift here that God has been, you know, wanting to use for his glory. And so the Apologist was like, yo, man, you got some skills. You got to just keep writing, keep practicing. And I did. But the lane that I wanted to go in and that I felt God leading me was to talk about pain, hurt, and suffering from a Christian perspective, because when I was hearing Christian hip hop in the early 2000s, late 90s and whatnot, from the music from there, I didn't hear a lot of that. I heard a lot of like, oh, you know, this is how to be a good Christian. And I used to do this, but now I do this. And I'm like, yo, did y'all ever have bad days? 'Cause sometimes like I wake up and I'm not, you know, killing it spiritually, or I'm going through some pain or some hurt or some doubt or battling unbelief and things like that. So that's the lane I feel God has called me to be on. But it was related to, if I never went through what I went through with some of that, the suffering, then I don't think I would go down that path musically.
Makes sense. I mean, you know, you probably heard this term before, your misery becomes your ministry, or your mess becomes your message. And so that sounds like exactly how God would do it. I mean, even with myself, like I used to go to a church years ago that was a cult, but it was like covered up in Christendom. And basically the pastor of that church ended up being a false prophet. Everybody who went there, I mean, it was a lot of people that got messed up over the situation. And I actually wrote my first book based on that situation that I went through there. So, yeah, I can attest to, you know, the misery becomes a ministry, mess becomes a message type of thing. Now, when you were growing up, though, obviously, there had to be a reason why you started to think that you wanted to freestyle and rhyme and all that kind of stuff. What caused you to think? Because I know you had your older brother who was doing that, but were you just feeling like because he did it, you could do it? Or, I mean, what was it that was in you that made you want to do that and made you feel like that was something that you could be good at?
Yeah. So I would say I've been listening to rap since around 91, 92. And basically I tell some people with, you know, cause my dad had moved that, and I even have a line, I think in a song somewhere, I can't remember it all the way off the top of my head, but like basically in a sense, hip hop raised me. So I used to listen in Pittsburgh. There was a station called Whammo, and they had the top 8 at 8 every night. I would listen to that, record it. Friday nights they would play like different underground hip hop. Again, this is before the internet. I would record it on it with the cassette tape. I would I would watch BET Rap City. I would watch OMTV Jam. Sometimes I would watch The Box. I would watch whatever I could watch, and I grew a love for the expression of hip hop and, you know, lyricism. And so actually when I was in sixth grade, Tim was in eighth grade, we made a track together, or at least we wrote a song. All I remember from that was I bust a cap in your back because I'm fat and I'm all that, want to talk smack, you get jacked. I don't remember any of the rest, but I know I was talking about that. And I didn't own a gun. I was in sixth grade. But it was like back then I was listening to gangster rap and whatever. So
yeah,
I had just been around it so much that in high school when I was freestyling or whatever, I just became like, a student of the culture. And I would think of different lines and think of different bars. And then I was just eventually like, man, I can maybe do this. And then just to be honest and to give credit where it's due, yeah, then I started seeing my brother, because he was a battle rapper and a secular rapper, and then I saw his transformation and him rhyming for the Lord. I never had a super strong desire, to be honest, to be a secular rapper. But once I felt, man, I have this love for hip-hop, I feel like there's an ability here, and number three, I feel like there's a lane that is a unique lane. Okay, let's see what happens here if I start practicing this thing and start. It was actually the first time I spit. It was at an open mic at Sharon Baptist Church in Philly. I spit a spoken word at this open mic, and I kid you not, I don't know if I've ever received a more hype ovation or cheering after I got done off of stage than that first time I spit. And that gave me mad confidence to continue on, and like the green light, God saying like, okay, there's a gift here. Because I think I would go to these cafes or open mics and people didn't really know I could spit. And then when I did and it went really well and people said I killed it, it was like, oh snap, that boy can spit. Like, it was very encouraging, and that was like the green light to keep on going.
That's what's up, man. You know, I wanted to ask you this earlier, but I just thought about it again. What's your ethnic heritage, man?
Yeah, so I'm Caucasian, not Asian, not Haitian, not Jamaican. I'm saying what matters. I'm not pagan. That's a line from a song. No, so I'm Caucasian. I'm a 25%, and I'm sure if I did a whole, you know how people do the thing online where they get more into like the DNA and all that. But I am Irish. I am German, English, and Polish.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know why, but for some reason I was thinking Irish before you even told me. Yeah, I was thinking that, but that was just, it was a curiosity. I just wanted to find out. So, so as far as like you doing Christian hip hop, man, like when you started to get into it, like what would you say that back then, especially in the, like, you know, when you're talking about in the time when you started, it was still a time where, you know, the internet had not taken off yet, really. It was still kind of, people were still trying to figure it out and trying to figure out how to use it and what's the purpose of it and is it going to be necessary or whatever. And that was also around the time when Napster was getting a lot of, you know, doing what it was doing. And so at that time, what would you say as far as like, how Christian rap, Christian hip hop was for you as far as like what the, how it was doing in the church and in just outside of the church as far as like the reach of it and the acceptance of it and so forth. Because one thing I know for a fact is that churches were really like rejecting Christian hip hop. and they were calling it the devil's music or whatever. And I remember in 1999, I had Manny come out to my church. For those that don't know, The Truth. I had The Truth come out to my church, and he did his thing there. And it was like I saw back then, like, where it could go if the right people were really, you know what I'm saying, pushing it. So how was your experience in the early days of you coming into it? How was it for you?
Yeah, I would say that, like, in the very early 2000s, all I had ever heard was, I want to say this was like early 90s, like DC Talk, right? So that's all I knew about. And then I started to get exposed to, Mars Hill, Cross Movement. Like I said, there was like other, like LA Symphony, stuff like that. To me, I'm going to talk about both from a listener perspective, and also like an artist perspective. So I felt back then, of all those groups, the group that I liked the most was like probably Mars Hill and then the Cross Movement. I appreciated Mars Hill just because it was just like straight boom bap hip hop, and then Cross Movement because they had like the East Coast dope rhymes, you know, hooks and whatnot. But one thing that I thought was slightly missing was the creative aspect. And oftentimes you can hear people maybe in the world, they might be like, Christian hip hop is whack. And I think that sometimes there's a negative connotation with Christian hip hop, because over the years there have been some artists that weren't very talented, but you know, there's been mad whack secular rappers. There's been mad whack, you know, reggae artists or rock and roll or whatever. But the Christian hip hop has gotten a bad rap sometimes because of that. I don't think Christian hip hop is whack. I don't think back then it really was whack, but I do think there could have been more creativity. And what I mean by that, then I started to meet cats like Evangel from Christ-Centric, who's actually, you know, not too far from you in Maryland, or starting to hear some of Fanatic stuff or some Shy Lin or Stephen the Levi. And I started hearing like, oh, wow, these dudes are using alliteration, or these dudes are telling a story. These dudes are telling a story about Jonah. You know what I mean? These dudes are telling a story about the road to Emmaus, or they're telling the story about like the prodigal son in their rap, or they're drawing parallels here and there. And I was like, man, this is banging. And yeah, I got into the game rapping like around 04, 05 and stuff. And I felt that that was an area that I could help, try to go down that path and add to the Christian hip hop scene, which was creative bars. You know, so we're going to write the Christ, the cross, the crucifixion, the gospel message is going to be central to the overall concept of the album or the project. But we can have so many different ways to talk about that, so many biblical issues that we can talk about, so many things through a biblical worldview that we can talk about. And as far as the internet goes back then, the Hip Hop Zone message board, and then later, a few years later, the Holy Culture message board, that's how a lot of the word got out about certain projects and certain shows. And there was a lot of in-person shows. Back then you had Rap Fest in New York every year in the Bronx, which was super dope. You had Flavor Fest in Tampa. And you had like all these other different type of fests going on in different cities. Sound the Alarm in Baltimore. And
yeah, Sister D, my cousin.
Yeah, Sister D, like like that's where you would meet other artists. It wouldn't, there was no social media. So there was the internet. So you had Hip Hop Zone, you had Holy Culture. And then right when I was coming out with music, MySpace, that's how people would find out about your music, was on MySpace. And so there was way more concerts, fests. That's how you would meet people. It wasn't like you would just go on to Instagram or Twitter and meet someone. It was in-person interaction that was super dope. So to sum it up in your question, I would say I think that, yeah, there could have been a little bit more creativity from some of that early Christian hip-hop. And there could have been more creativity. And the internet, it was like, I liked it back then, man. I liked how, you know, people could find out about you on MySpace, and then you would just have a lot more interaction at shows, and you had less, you still had some tough guys on Hip Hop Zone, but it was less like critics hiding behind a keyboard.
I'm going to piggyback on something that you said earlier. So first of all, it's interesting you brought up Rap Fest, because I think that my first time, I'm still not sure exactly when the first time was. I believe it was 2001 when I first went to Rap Fest. And then I was going there. I went there a couple more times over the years. And like you said, you know, the good thing about that is it was an outlet for Christian hip hop. And it was like, what I love about what Bert did for us is that he gave us a forum where we could be able to hear the music that we love, because it wasn't like you weren't getting it at churches. So you had to get it somewhere outside of a church. And so Bert, being, I know that he wasn't the only one, but he at least, you know, at Rap Fest, that was like one of the biggest ones that I went to. And I remember how, you know, he had a lot of good artists that would do what they do. And it was like very organic, you know what I'm saying? You would be able to see somebody on the stage, like you said, and then afterwards you go over there and holler at them, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's good? You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. So, that was something that I liked about it. And that was partly how I was meeting some of the people early on in my, you know, time of finally connecting with artists that I'd been hearing, but I had never met. And so that was like, you know, when it started for me going to Rap Fest. And so, yeah, that was when, it was really very fun to me. I really felt like it was very fun. It was very much like a place where you could find new friends and fellowship. I mean, I've met several people just because I went to Rap Fest, and they're still friends of mine to this day, you know. And so I remember that kind of camaraderie there and whatnot. And that's something that, I mean, I don't know how many events are out there like that these days. But it's like, I remember that it seemed like some of them kind of fell off a little bit or whatever. Or they just stopped doing it. Like, you know, I was really, I'll be honest, I was really disappointed with Bert to stop Rap Fest. I was like, man, I really wish that was going to continue. But, you know, but yeah, that's just one of those things that I feel like it also helped to kind of unite the CHH community, you know what I'm saying, even more, and to, you know, help us support one another, you know what I'm saying? So that's a good thing. So another thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about this is the fact that people, you know, back then, because there wasn't this whole thing where you could just, you just knew that there was a certain place you go online to find all the latest music. It was harder to even know about artists back then unless you went to an event or unless you, like you said, went to some kind of a forum if you even knew about it and whatnot. So when you think about that, I mean, I'm sure that you probably agree that that was one of the biggest reasons why the people that were doing it back then they didn't get the same type of exposure to people. People couldn't find them as easily or as readily as they can find artists these days. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And then also, I think you mentioned it earlier, there is sometimes that's a heart struggle. In my a project I put out in 2 years ago called Glory Thieves, the whole theme of that project was basically like, we are inclined to want the shine. We are inclined to want the glory. We are inclined to want to be thieves of God's glory. And it's a realistic heart struggle when you know you're putting in a lot of thought, a lot of time, a lot of energy into every bar that's written, and then you see a newcomer have, you know, overnight, at least it seems, type of success due to certain social media outlets or certain website coverage. And I think that's a battle that we all have to be real with in our hearts and just at the end of the day remember, hey, I'm doing this for God's shine and not my own. Obviously, you want to be heard. Obviously, you want to do what's wise with the talent that's been given, and you want to push your stuff. You know, you want to promote your album. You want to promote your videos, and you want to spread the word about your music. But ultimately, you know, man can plan his way, but God directs his steps. So God is in control of all that stuff, and I think leaving it up to him and being content is something, it's a battle, but it's something that we have to strive for with that, yeah. But
so I just want
to social media. Go ahead.
I do want to ask you something, though, man, just to be real, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if you think that the issue with, let's say, the OGs in it versus the young newcomers, do you think that it's because the OGs, a lot of them, don't not know how to use the tools that the younger ones are using to do what they're doing? Do you think that that's a part of it, or do you think that it's because people that are younger who are, I would say, probably the main supporters, I don't even know, to be honest, but let's just say maybe younger ones are thinking that they look at older ones and they're looking at them like, maybe they're not relevant, and they haven't given them a chance to show that they're relevant.
Yeah, I think a couple things. My perspective on that would be, yes, I do think that the younger generation is more tech savvy. They're better at doing different stuff on Instagram stories. They're better at, they have friends who are better at editing a little short video that can help with promotion for an album. More of their friends are on that outlet, let's say like on Instagram, whereas some of the OGs, they might not know how to really capture their audience well on an Instagram story or on a going live or Q&A, whatever it may be. So they might not be as good with the usage of the social media, but also like, all right, you know, I work with athletes. So now this semester, we used to have workouts posted on iPads, right? And now this semester, because of COVID restrictions, it's like, okay, we don't want four players all touching the same iPad with the COVID stuff. So we're allowing them to use their phones in the weight room and the workout. It's posted on a hard copy bulletin board, but it's also on their phone. And, you know, I said, yo, make sure all you're doing is looking, it's the app that we put the workouts on. Everyone's just looking at Team Builder, no FB or IGs. And they were like, FBs, that's for old heads. So it's like the type of social media that certain people are using too, and where people are. Like most of the younger generation is on like Instagram and TikTok. I'm not even on TikTok, but like most of the younger generation, they're on Instagram and TikTok. Maybe a few are on Twitter, whereas the cats that we, you know, kind of grew up listening to, more of them might be on Facebook. Another thing is, I think that as as we got into the mid, like I want to say around 2014, 2015, this is when I personally noticed a drop-off in the amount of shows in Philly, in the DMV area, in Jersey, like all around the East Coast. There was less amount of shows and less people at the shows, to the point where COVID happened last year. And even before COVID, the amount of shows that I would either do in person or go to drastically was less than I would say around 2013, 14, or even 15. And I think one of the reasons for that, Norm, was that Christian hip hop was no longer a new phenomenon. So in the early 2000s, late 2000s, everyone was going to all these shows, Rap Fest, Flavor Fest, you know, in, you know, wherever, Baltimore, Silver Springs, Rockville, all over Maryland, all over, you know, PA. And it was like, yo, I've never been exposed to dope Christian hip hop. Like you were saying earlier, you had the Truth come out, and it was like, yo, some of those cats had never been exposed to dope Christian hip hop. And then I think a lot of people got spoiled, because it was like, oh, I heard Jay Silas before. I heard Timothy before. I heard Steven before. I want, you know, now I'm married. Now I got kids. I can't be out as late. It's not as popular. It's not as cool. So I think that had something to do with it, as well as some of the OGs not adapting well to the times and maybe having outdated flows or outdated beats and things like that. So I think there's a way in which, and I've tried to stay strict to my roots, and as far as like I'm like a boom bap East Coast hip hop head, but at the same time I'm willing to try to spit on a different trap beat here and there, or a commercial sounding beat here and there, or switch up the flow, speed up the flow to try to be a little bit more current, where some of the OGs, I would say, haven't done a good job of either attempting to stay relevant or staying relevant with the sound. And that's been kind of a turnoff. And so they're like, man, I would rather listen to someone with more of a current sound.
I completely agree with you. And I think that that speaks to something that even really it kind of translates even to the church as a whole. The church as a whole has not learned how to transition with the times to become relevant to this generation that we're in, and to also be able to be heard by them, because they don't know how to use the various mediums or means to reach them. Where, if you look at it, even with the certain types of, let's say, preachers that are out there now, and you'll find that certain ones who are like the younger ones, they are seemingly blowing up, but those younger ones that seem to be blowing up, they're using YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, whatever that's out there that is pretty just much popping or popular, whatever. And those are the ones that are really getting a lot of shine now, versus those that were just using television or whatever, and they were like, yeah, I'm on this channel on TV, and they think that that's still going to be the best way for them to be seen or heard or whatever. And really, that's kind of like one of many that needs to be used to, in order to be able to make an impact. And so let me ask you this, man, because you are an artist in CHH, and you've seen and heard and been around guys that probably, I'm sure they talk about this in the right type of situation or environment, they'll be talking about it. Do you think that a lot of these guys, one of the things that they need is somebody to help promote what they're doing? Like they need a marketing type of, marketing team or something like that. And because they don't have that, they're not really getting out there the way that they could be.
Yeah, I think that could be definitely helpful. I think it makes me think of record labels. So back, if you were on Cross Movement, you were on Lamp Mode, you were on Reach, you were highly respected. You were highly regarded if you were on one of those three, or then even like Humble Beast or whatever. Then with the surge of the internet, and then like you mentioned, streams and social media and whatnot. Before, why did you need a label? You needed a label to help promote you, cover the cost of the recording or of the videos, and to let people know about your music. But then when you had the surge in the popularity of social media, it's like, okay, well, they're taking almost all my money. I'm not really seeing that much money from my albums. Why am I going to sign with someone when I could get just as much following and keep more of the money? So I think you had that before, which is the labels were the ones helping to push you. Now I think it's very helpful not just to have like a marketing manager, but you got to have other artists in your corner that will help promote. And if anyone has known me for the last 15 years of Christian hip hop, if I've been cool with you and you had an album come out, I would say, yo, go check out this new Dayton. Go check out this new Bizzle. Go check out this new Braille. Go check out this new Sale Out of Corner. Whoever, you know, Corey Red, Precise. Like, I would be pushing them, you know, their project. And so I think a lot of it is best when it's organic and we're supporting one another. I know that might not be a direct answer to your question, but I do think that we got to be able to support each other when albums are dropped and kind of have that quote-unquote buzz that can help spread the word.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you said it that way, because one of my desires that I have been working on, but I need to definitely have more people become part of it to see what it can do and how effective it can be. I want to put together a group of people that all are supporting in that way that you were just talking about, where it's a community where once, let's just say this is, you know, one of those things where if you had, let's say you talk about, you got a new album that just came out. Let's just say as a hypothetical situation, you had 10,000 followers on Instagram, and you put it out to those 10,000 followers. So now you just got 10,000 followers, who some of which possibly might share it on their type of thing, you know, to their friends and family or whoever. But let's just say you had 20 people who have 10,000 followers that are also your friends or also connected to you in that sense, and they all promote it at the same time. Now you've got 200,000 people who heard about your album, not just 10,000. And so my whole thing is you multiply the effectiveness of it by having more people that are promoting it. And if everybody is being equal in their promotion, in the sense of they're all supportive of each other within that group, then you're able to make an impact even without spending money. You're able to make a really big impact just because you got 20 other people that are willing to promote your thing when it comes out. And then you would do the same thing, vice versa, just like you said. That's something that I've had a desire to do, and I'm still doing it. I am doing it already, but, you know, I'm looking to add more people to what I'm doing. So, yeah, that's a great idea, like you said.
I totally agree. Totally agree with that approach. One other thing. So, totally agree. I would encourage you to try to bring it into fruition. I think it's an awesome idea. I think also the market is a little bit flooded right now because of stream. And is it the artist's fault or is it the fans' fault? I don't really know. But right now, the expectation used to be you just put out a really dope thematic album and you had the CD and you had to spend a lot of time getting the graphics right for the front cover and the back cover and the disc and the little book on the inside you know, you wanted to say something kind of cool in there, have some dope pictures in there, and you had a theme for the album. Every song was connected to the next song, and there might have been 15 songs. There might have been 18 songs, and the consumer loved that. They liked buying that project. They liked, you know, when the CD was 70 total minutes, whereas now everything is just on someone's phone. They have instant access to your album. They can listen to it whenever they want to listen to it. And so you have the streams. You don't even have to buy the album. You could just get on Spotify, Apple Music, and just stream all these albums, or these, rather, it's more so songs, where like complete holistic albums are starting to even not be the norm anymore, are starting to kind of be out of style. So I think that the market is so flooded by so many people putting out music, the expectation is also, like, let's say you put out a real, you know, heavy, dope, thematic concept album, but yo, that, but did you drop anything this year? It's like the expectation is like you're supposed to put out a project every year now, because albums are shorter and then people's attention spans are shorter. That's like more of the norm, is the expectation. Hey, just give me a 3-song EP or give me a single. Instead of like this longer album, people just want their, you know, their appetites filled right away. They want it. They want the fast food. They don't want to wait, you know, 45 minutes for the steak to cook.
That's a good way that you put that. And I've definitely seen that trend as well. However, I also would say that, like, let's just say, for instance, you see a person like Jay-Z. Now, Jay-Z's obviously, he has obviously adapted to the times, adapted with the times.
Agreed.
And then you see him come out with an album like 444, and it's like, you know, people are copping the whole album. So, again, this goes back to the thing of, are Christian artists, specifically hip-hop artists, because they're the ones that I see this as more of an issue with than others for some reason. But I wonder if it's because Christian artists, hip-hop artists, are not really, you know, it's all about how they are presenting what they're presenting. And based on how they present it is going to determine how, you know, what people are going to do as far as the response. And again, like, I've seen brand new artists that come out with something, and they're talking about at the end of the year they had 1 million streams. So my question is, okay, they had 1 million streams, but, you know, apparently they were doing stuff that was really, you know, promoting it or whatever, because it's not that these younger artists are, you know, just – their music is more impactful, whatever, necessarily, but it's also, it's really about how they promote it and how often they promote it and stuff like that. And I think when you look at one of the things that I'm seeing, and I believe that this is where it takes something like what I'm talking about to help the older artists, is that older artists are in a situation where they have the kids, the family. You know, you got the married life or whatever, you're older, so you're now more concentrated on some other things and not as much on, you know, how to promote your stuff or whatever. And so that's where they need somebody that can come in and promote for them and whatnot, and take their things, put it out there on the right platforms and whatnot, and then really get them the kind of exposure that they need. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
I agree. I would also say I think it's important to put out good quality music that is, you know, I always tell younger artists, what should I rap about? Okay, well, what are you passionate about? That's going to be the best music. Sometimes it takes life experiences to bring that out of you. Sometimes it takes some pain or hardship. Like you said, your message. And put out good quality music, be consistent with it, And I do think there's an area, though, where we got to, in our hearts, be, by all means, promote. By all means, spread the word. But then be content with who the Lord has to hear that message. I had a line in a song. It's called Battle for Contentment. So it's talking about this very issue. And there's a video for it, too, if anyone wants to look it up on YouTube. But at the end of the song, I said something along the lines of, if I only reach a few of the people hurting, I'm going to keep on making songs because to me it's worth it. And if I only reach a few of the people hurting, I'm going to keep on making songs because to me it's worth it. So, like, whether it's 10 or whether it's 100, whether it's 1,000 or it's 10,000, I think that as artists, we got to strive to be content with what the Lord, with the audience that the Lord has us to reach. I'm not saying don't promote. I'm not saying don't get people to spread the word. I'm not saying don't be confident in your craft. But I think that we can go overboard sometimes if we're just expecting, like, if we get too caught up in that. If we get too caught up in the numbers, I think we can start losing sight of the mission. And that's where I think compromise can sometimes occur, where it's like, okay, well, if I start mentioning Christ less, or I start, you know, kind of just being positive and not talking about my faith as much, yeah, I might be able to do better numbers or better sales. And I think we should be a little bit careful of that. I'm not saying that's what you're saying. I'm just saying for the listeners, something to keep in mind with that balance.
I agree, man. I mean, that's definitely always a thing that anybody.
Thanks for listening to the New Numa Godcast once again. This is your host, Norm. Follow me at Norm the Professor on IG. I'm in agreement for power and breakthrough in your life. Keep tuning in every week for that real talk, new life.
What's good, family? We know you're enjoying today's episode of New Numa Godcast with none other than Norman Brown, the professor. But we had to interrupt briefly to tell you about Norman's latest book. Recently, with all that's been happening with the pandemic, many have had questions. And in May 2020, Norman was hospitalized for 9 days with COVID-19. When he came out of the hospital, he came out with a powerful testimony of how God saved him from death and his inspiration to write his newest book, Covert COVID-19, An Attack on Kingdom Agendas. Now, in this book, he shares his personal story of how he was attacked by the spirit that causes this virus, as he declared war while he was writing this book, but he overcame it through faith, prayer, and fasting. In the book, he shares the revelation that God gave him about how this virus affected and exposed certain things about the church at large, which are necessary for believers to understand what's going on and this new thing God is doing in the earth. His book is available for download today on Amazon, so get your copy today.